From North State Public Radio, I'm Ava Nora Grove with your headlines for Thursday, August 8th. Forest thinning can reduce wildfire risk, but it also generates waste from cut-down vegetation. A new facility in Yuba City plans to use waste from those projects to generate electricity. NSPR's Ken Duvall explains.
The Yuba Water Agency Board of Directors Tuesday approved funding for the construction of a bioenergy plant near the community of Dobbins. According to reporting by the Appeal Democrat, the 5-megawatt facility will process more than 40,000 tons of biowaste per year. That amount of biowaste would come from as much as 3,000 acres of forest thinning. The electricity it generates would be sold to PG&E. The Yuba Water Agency approved a $7 million grant and an additional $8.3 million loan for the project. Fuel reduction efforts in California generate a tremendous amount of wood waste. Some of it is used for timber, but there's still more wood from thinning than the market can absorb. It's also not financially feasible for contractors doing the tree thinning to haul the waste to the few facilities that are able to process it. Right now, most of the material is burned on site. According to officials from Engman Energy, which will build the facility, construction is expected to start in November and be completed early next year. For NSPR News, I'm Kendall Ball.
California is facing another summer of record-high heat. With more heat comes a greater need for cooling. The cost of energy has also jumped since the beginning of this year, with Pacific Gas and Electric Company raising its rates in January. Now the agency is expanding programs to help residents pay past due energy bills. The company said in a press release Tuesday it's making changes to its Reach Aid program. That program offers up to $2,000 of relief on past due energy bills for eligible customers. Changes to the program include allowing customers with any past due balance to apply. Customers on payment plans and customers who already applied this year can also apply. The company said it's also expanding its income eligibility threshold. And in other news, the U.S. Forest Service is looking to fill positions on two committees in Shasta and Trinity counties. The two resource advisory committees aim to secure grant funding for projects that improve local ecosystems, current infrastructure, and more. Committee members serve 4-year terms without compensation. The Forest Service is requesting applications for the positions to be submitted by October 25th. And federal officials say a weed killer that's been used in California for decades must be removed from the market immediately. The rare emergency order came down from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency earlier this week. CalMatter's Rachel Becker has the details.
The herbicide known as DCPA or Dacthal can harm the developing brains of unborn babies, EPA officials report. DCPA has been used by farmers across California, with the heaviest use in Monterey County, according to state data. Imperial, Fresno, and Riverside are also some of the counties with the largest usage in the state. Pregnant farm workers and those who live near fields are at greatest risk. A 2019 UC Berkeley study of Salinas Valley farmworker communities found exposure to DCPA in more than half of the nearly 100 Latina girls assessed. A representative from the California-based manufacturer AMVAC says the company is complying with the EPA's order and had already withdrawn the weed killer from the market in May, following earlier warnings about the health risks from the agency.
That was CalMatter's Rachel Becker. And finally, during disasters like the Park Fire, those evacuating are sometimes separated from their pets. Microchipping can help families be reunited with their animals if they're lost. Butte Humane Society is now providing free microchipping for all Butte County residents on a first-come, first-served basis as funds last. The program is funded by donations. NSPR's Angel Hiracha spoke with Executive Director Emily Acevedo to learn more.
Over the last several years, we've been impacted by a lot of emergency evacuation situations, whether it was the fire or the spillway. The fires continue to happen, and we see that in some of those situations, especially the campfire, people did not have time to go back home and evacuate their pets. Some people only had time to let their pets loose and hope that they made it to safety. And what we've seen in the aftermath of these is, you know, stray pets end up at a temporary emergency shelter, and the quickest way to get them reunited or to even let their owners know that they've been recovered and they're safe is scanning a microchip. It's as simple as putting it into a database, and you get that contact information and can call the owner and say, we have your pet, they're here, but then also know that that pet is owned by somebody so that the reunification process is that much simpler.
How did the idea for cost-covered microchipping come about to you guys? How did you see that as a source of helping others in the community?
Absolutely. So Butte Humane Society is a private nonprofit. We don't have contracts with the city or county to provide services. And so having been through a couple of disasters now, we've always tried to look at how we can support people. And then for future disasters, make sure that we're limiting the problems that come after that as much as possible. So for us, in the aftermath of the temporary animal shelters from the campfire and the North Complex fire, and now the park fire, you look and you see the pictures that the organization like NAVDAG is posting, like these animals are at the shelter, and you can see that these are well cared for animals, that they had to belong to somebody. But the lack of microchipping means that unless you're somebody who's displaced by the disaster and you know where to look, you might not find your pet. And the reality is that the temporary shelters are designed to close eventually. They're only active while the emergency is going on. Those animals, if they're not claimed, have to be transferred to other shelters. If you're lucky, they end up in the shelter that's in the county that was impacted. But sometimes and often what we're seeing now, because the shelters are full all the time anyways, outside of a disaster, is that those animals can sometimes be transferred to other counties or even other states. The microchip is that one key piece of identifying information. You know, collars can fall off, tags can get burned, but the microchip is going to stay. And as long as you keep your information up to date, we will always be able to scan that animal and get it back to you.
Recently, you know, with the current park fire, we've had the Orvo fire. Did you notice anything in terms of animals and microchipping being an easier process to identify pets by doing that?
It's always, you know, an easier process with a microchip to identify. I don't have statistics on how many more animals were microchipped during these recent evacuations than we would have seen during the campfire. But I will say that I would imagine that microchipping has gained a lot of popularity over the last couple of years, that probably the pets who have ended up in shelters this summer on the larger end have been microchipped, I would say, at a higher percentage than previous emergency evacuations.
Recently, I read on social media that you also were providing a food pantry for those impacted by the park fire. Is that still ongoing?
Absolutely. So the pet food pantry is actually something that Butte Humane has had going on for well over a decade. It really started as a necessity. When we look at kind of pathways of pets coming into a shelter, food insecurity can be one of those things, because at that point, if you're struggling to provide food for your family, food for a pet kind of becomes a luxury item. But what we also know is really successful is if we can keep pets out of shelters and with their families, that's what we want to try to do. And so the pet food pantry has been a program that has been ongoing because we want to support people. If you've fallen on hard times, you don't want to surrender your, you know, pet on top of everything else. Let's help get you some food. Make sure that your pet is fed and taken care of until you can get back on your feet. We let people come and pick up to 10 pounds of pet food a week, but we also participate with a lot of other local nonprofits who support people who have pets and providing pet food to them so that they can get it to the people who they serve. And so one of the first things that we did, you know, with the park fire was open up the pet food pantry to be an everyday thing, so that if you are somebody who is displaced and you need pet food or supplies right now, we're available during the week, all week long, and can get people the supplies that they need, because it can be kind of tough. You don't even know where you're staying. Kind of the last thing that's on your mind is like going and grabbing a pet bed or a leash or a collar or a bag of food. But ultimately, then you're going to end up somewhere and go, hey, I need to feed my pet, and we want to be a resource for that.
That was Butte Humane Society Executive Director Emily Acevedo speaking with NSPR's Angel Hiracha. And those are your headlines for Thursday, August 8th. Our theme song is Burrow and courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions. For more local and state news, head to our website, mynspr.org. For NSPR News, I'm Ava Noor Grove.